Mike and Miana gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for week 3 of Survivor 42. My name is Mike Bloom, and wow, the wackiness of Survivor 42 keeps on rolling, much like rocks, or should I say rocks stopping at this point. Not rocks, Roy. He was barely seen this episode. But there's a lot to get into from an episode that I would call unorthodox in many ways. And of course, we have assembled an illustrative panel to bring it all together. First, of course, the co-owner of the B&B, someone I would always go to rocks with, no matter what, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous. I'm so excited to talk about this. I was like, can we move the recording up? I like need to talk about this episode because there's so many decision points that were made that were terrible, that is going to be so fun to break down. So, you know, yeah, look, we ultimately didn't end up going to Roy Rocks here, but we still have so many things to get into.
Exactly. There are so many decision points to even get us to. I mean, like you said, yes, we didn't go to Rocks, but the fact that we are even discussing the fact that we could have in episode 3 is ridiculous in and of itself. And speaking of ridiculousness, not the MTV show, I cannot think of a better person to welcome in here to talk all the nonsense going on in Survivor 42. And it really is a lot of nonsense, but in the most fun way. Of course, she is a magnet over on Post Show Recap, covering so many things. But I guess more recently on Reality TV or Half Up, she has been doing the most recently coined Off Speed podcast, aforementionedly known as the Sports Rehap Up. So happy to welcome the great Grace Leader to the podcast. Grace, Did the delay of any challenge remind you of any like baseball rain delays?
Yes, very. Yes, very rain delay. Except normally they wouldn't then be like, okay, now you two can start the exact same. You can start the exact same
and like skip a few innings.
The score is tied actually now. You know, yeah. I just want to say I came here. I am absolutely. I just want to say I'm not going to rock this episode. I'm
not okay. That's the thing. Grace made the first claim. So therefore, yeah. Like, we're the ones that yeah. You know. Well, I guess you're the Daniel, so we're the high, right? We could be like, well, that's I right. am, and you're like. All right. Well. Sorry.
Well, I guess I have to change my vote.
Hashtag lawyered for the lawyer sure. himself. Well, Grace, this is, believe it or not, your debut on the B&B, the day B&BU, if you That's want good. To. That's Thank good. You. Thank you for placating me. So what we always do when we welcome someone new on is we ask, what is your Survivor origin story? When did you get into the show proper? What season/castaways have you hooked to the point you have come back to be on our silly podcast?
I am a season 1 watcher. And very similar to a lot of people, I did not watch the premiere of Survivor. It's like, you know, you heard that it was a fun show and we watch it. And my earliest Survivor memories, I don't really remember watching a lot of the early stuff. I was like 9. But what I do remember is that the Survivor finales used to be on Sunday nights. Mm-hmm. And my mom would have us have Sunday Survivor finale Sunday nights, where we would make ice cream sundaes. She would go and get toppings, like gummy bears and sprinkles and chocolate chips. And then we would all make our sundaes and we would sit and watch the Survivor finale after dinner. That's my earliest memory. And now it doesn't work because they just have the finale on Wednesdays. The joke, the bit doesn't work at all. I was like, why are you having a sundae?
Yeah, but, there's no Wednesday food, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I don't think
white rice Wednesdays, but
So I watched the show. I fell off of it, you know, as a lot of people did in like the early teens. Do you know what Survivor Gabon was the first season I got back watching? I was like, yeah, HD. I'll come back and watch, and I've been watching ever since. So yeah.
All right, listen. They had said I could see a monkey butt up close. All right,
let's see that elephant dung. Yeah,
that a high quality energy. I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
So that being said, obviously we are in high def, quite literally with a guy named High this season for quite some time. What have been your thoughts about this season so far? I actually had a DM fall into my lap this past week where someone said, like, this is on the track to be a Gabon-esque season. Do you agree? I mean, listen, we're only a small sample size and we're only three episodes, four boots in. But what has been your take on Survivor 42 thus far, Grace?
Yeah, the Gabon like season is very interesting because I think I keep like looking at the cast and I just don't really see the clear front runner. I know it's only three episodes in. Like my winner pick is Hai, who I very much liked preseason. I think Hai had a really, really good episode. But that came as a result of like being on the bottom and us being, I think, a little bit impressed that he was able to maneuver his way out of potentially being at the bottom of what would have been a five person tribe. And now I think he's worked his way into the top of the tribe. But I think even I don't know that I look at Hai and think like, yeah, for sure, Hai can just like run away with this. And again, it's early. I don't know, you know, if I was to go back and think like after three episodes, do we always like feel like there are front runners? But I feel like, yeah, nobody just like stands out above the rest. And so it's a very, very interesting season. There's certainly like capable players out there, but it feels like any episode, anybody could go mm-hmm. home. So I've been really enjoying it. I think the last few seasons, you know, we're in the Survivor community, I always feel a little bit like, boy, it's a lot of twists. And the thing we always fall back is like, at least the cast is really good. And that's what I look at. Like, I'm kind of, you know, I don't know who's going to go home. I'm also sad that anybody would go home. Yeah. Super sad that Jenny went home, but I didn't want Lydia to go home either. Mm-hmm. So I think for that reason, it's going to be fun ride because, you know, every week you're sort of going to be disappointed at whoever goes home.
And I think another thing that is maybe Gabon-like about the season is that there's a lot of mess,
yeah.
which I'm not mad at all. And I think that with only three episodes in, we're getting a flavor for how these contestants are going to play the game. And if this is just the start of the journey, I have to imagine that there's definitely going to be a lot more mess along the way.
To that point, not to say this is something that it has in common with Gabon, because I think Gabon, for all of its nonsense, is also a pretty negatively tinged season. I think people just don't necessarily like each other out there. Do we think that is a component to an entertaining Survivor season? Like, I don't know, because I still am, you know, not sure about this one. Something like Millennials versus Gen X really didn't have a lot of acrimony to it, you know, outside of that whole Taylor filching the mason jars stuff. Like, there really wasn't a lot of dramatics going on. And here in 42, you know, we have close allies, Daniel and Chanel, like getting out in an argument in front of tribal council. So not to say we need like a Worlds Apart-esque, oh my God, they're making these incredibly personal comments to people and really getting into the dirges of society. But I do wonder if part of the reason why we're also really enjoying this is because the producers kind of did their job and put people together who won't necessarily get along so that when these moments come out, it really is tinged dramatically. That again, in the first tribal council for this tribe on day 7, they were contemplating going to rocks and close allies were throwing each other under the bus in tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Grace.
I think the most fun server is not when people hate each other and are angry at each other. Angry, you know, maybe a little bit. It's when they're like very clearly annoyed by each other is my favorite, yeah. I think. So when like Chanel's like, Daniel, like, what are you doing? Like, I don't think it's like, yeah, angry in the immediate sense, but doesn't hate Daniel. It's just, I think, very, very annoyed that Daniel would choose to do that. I think it's the most fun energy you can get out of Survivor. Because when it starts to be like, I really, really hate that person, it can become a little bit less fun. But annoyance, I think, is the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think what brings the most drama is sort of a wide range of emotion. And so being able to have both people who are like really bonding and creating these fun relationships like Jonathan and Omar, then to the annoyance that Grace mentioned, I think that all of those things are really valuable to have in a season. But yeah, where it starts to border is like the hate element of it all, where that is just like not fun at all. But I think that that mix of emotion is important for all reality television. And so to have people that get along, people that don't get along, people that go after each other, that don't want to go after each other, that the range is really what's the most important thing.
I mean, I would even say that hate can sometimes be fun when it's over the top. I go back to Liana and Xander last time, for instance, right, where she's like, I hate his stupid face. And it's just like so ridiculous, right? When you can be compared to Michael Scott and Toby Flenderson from The Office, like, yeah. I'm still okay with that. The Laura Moret and Shambo as a good example. It's when we start to maybe veer into, again, some very like hateful personal remarks, and it's a very fine line, but like I do think that that's a fun component as well for this group, that you could tell over the past few episodes that like they've been having a lot of fun together. But I think this shows that really, like, Survivor is a game that's differently played until you put pen to parchment, or in the case of two of these people, when you don't, because that's when things really come out, when, you know, loyalties are certainly shown. And especially for people like Daniel, I think, like, when everything gets spilled out, right? He and Chanel were playing the middle pretty darn well, and they could feasibly entertain all sides until it came to a vote where they said, okay, who are you voting for? And then they're like, oh, no. Oh, right. We have to pick a side now. And I think that is, you know, quite obvious to say that, you know, the game started falling apart for them a bit once they actually had to pick a side. But the fact of the matter is, you can do all the hypotheticals you want, but once that hypothetical becomes actual, that's when you can get into a bit of trouble, depending on your personality.
I think, okay, so I kind of want to, like, go through each decision point, because I think that that's worth doing. So I'm trying to think of where to start. Do we start with Chanel on Shipwheel Island, or do we start with Daniel losing the idol?
I mean, is that a decision, though, to lose something?
I think if you have something very valuable and you make, like, mental you're like, okay, I can't lose this. I can't lose this. I can't lose this. It's valuable. I don't know. Feels very important. Or maybe the very first decision is High's comment, which I thought was fabulous, about, which has been mentioned, about how Daniel lost his shoulder, right? Like that, in listing the things that he lost. But anyway, yeah, Daniel is a mess. I think Chanel's decision on Shipwheel Island, obviously it has been discussed that how do you risk your vote here? Like, how? Because the thing is I could actually understand it if she thought that Mike had his vote, because she was like, well, we've got three regardless, so let me just try to get this extra tool for us moving forward. But based on what, or at least my assumption, is she was speaking in a way that she knew that Mike had lost his vote. So, like, what?
Yeah, the best argument I've heard is that it's such a cutesy play to think that you put yourself in, like, I cannot lose my vote. Rather than saying, I can't, not that I can't risk my vote, but I cannot lose my vote for tribal council. And so it's very funny, because when you watch that scene, Omar talks a lot about how there's, like, nonverbal communication that's happening. Mm-hmm. That he feels like Chanel is a good player, but maybe not as, like, sneaky as he would be. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you just want Chanel in that moment to just be like, please let me risk my vote. I can have that. But she's kind of doing it in a way that's like, you know, I'll put myself in such a position that it's like, I need the help. So, and let's not, we can't both have it, but, you know, let's make sure we walk away from this. And then she's thinking, okay, he's going to protect his vote. It's such a bad read. It's the total wrong read. And she doesn't play it well enough in the moment. If you're trying to walk out of that situation, getting the advantage. But I think most of the time, what we've seen is someone in Chanel, she's being like, let me offer you up the advantage. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, I'm in such a bad spot, I'm in a spot where I can't risk my vote. And this is, yep, I'm in a bad spot. I can't risk my vote. I can't lose my vote, but I am going to risk my, if she just says that part, but I am going to risk my vote. You know, mm-hmm. I think she walks away with the thing. Maybe she ends up on bad terms with Omar, but
well, that's a different the thing. Tribe. Who knows? She could essentially be the High, right, at tribal council, yeah, by being like, listen, yeah, we're playing chicken right now. I'm pulling the steering wheel out. I'm risking my vote. You do whatever you want to do. And I think, mm-hmm, Omar would, especially since he's down to four people, would be like, oh yeah, no, let me do this. What it entirely comes down to is, I think it's too cute by half. I think it is, mm-hmm, Chanel attempting to play 3D chess, understandable given, like, she is a gamer. If she says, okay, I convinced him that I can't risk my vote, and then I'm going to risk my vote secretly. That's literally all it comes down to, is she thought, if we're going to, like, the prisoner's dilemma, little square mapping out, she thought she had convinced him to protect the vote, because she had also, I think, perceived that, I don't know, maybe he was meek or someone that could be trusted. And then she said, okay, so while he's going to do that, I'm actually going to try to have my cake and eat it too. Said the whole damn cake fell on the floor, and now she can't eat it up whatsoever. And she lost the cake eating partner as well. So that is really what it came down to, I think, is just, for lack of a better term, like, overplaying it. I think making an incorrect assumption about what he would do. But I loved it. And I love comparing it to the second trip to Shipwheel Island in season 41, which is an exact scenario, Grace, that you were proposing, right? Where Evie said, my vote's really valuable. Listen to Sean. You can take the extra vote if you want to. And maybe this will, like, bond us for life or whatever. You know, my vote is needed, so I'm going to protect it. And instead, here we have a situation that I'm sure they were hoping for since the institution of the twist itself, of both people thought they were sneaky enough, both wristed. I don't know if what either one of you thought. I thought it was really mapped out through the editing. Like, they really like to underline sometimes when a bad decision is made on both parts, that you have both of them so cocksure that the other person is going to protect the vote, that when they risked it, I both saw it coming, and I absolutely loved it. Because, like, is that not modern Survivor in a nutshell? Thinking that you are such a tricky person only to be outsmarted by your competitors.
Mm-hmm. I also want to mention that Omar also made a mistake. Okay. Like, even though we're putting a lot of this on Chanel, of like, well, Chanel didn't communicate that, you know, she was either going to do one or the other. Neither did he. Omar didn't do the same thing either, which is going to result in both of them losing their vote. And he thinks he has his vote. So if Orange does go back to tribal council, neither he nor Marianne can vote, at least based on the idol activation at the time. So, and that's going to be a shock to him. So, like, just like both, it was so baffling. It's like in a relationship, when you both make assumptions about how the other person is feeling, it can like result in disaster. And that was this. Now, yes, I agree with you, Mike. It was epically wonderful TV disaster. And so, like, I'm here for it. So please, future players, make the same mistakes. Okay. Please do not learn from this moment.
Always risk your vote. Every time.
You know what? Just call it risk vote island now.
Yeah. Never communicate what you're going to do. That's exactly correct. Because that's the other thing is, like, we're kind of making the assumption that because we didn't see the conversation from the first group that went to Shipwheel Island, but I assume that maybe Marianne told Omar, even if Marianne didn't tell the whole group. But like Jenny, for sure, it seemed like Chanel had a sense of what was going
to
happen.
They to both the point where, say where, that they both say, like, yeah, this is what they told me. What? Yeah. This is what Marianne told me it was. It's like, yeah, that's what he told me it was. So.
Jenny told me in my interview with her that several people told Chanel before she went off, do not risk your vote. Make sure you don't do that. She's like, loud and clear, boss. Gotcha. Risk my vote. Okay.
It's like that SpongeBob meme with the like, is this your wallet? Yeah, so it's yours. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Or like Phoebe and Joey, right? Like, don't risk your vote. Exactly. Risk your vote.
I mean, I think it's interesting to think about how I feel like has Shipwheel Island, the only one I can really think of, and please correct me, anybody, if I'm wrong, is I feel like Shan and Liana have this connection that by being on Shipwheel Island, they are able to form a connection that does impact their game and their relationship further, that they are close. But I also feel like it does not matter whether there is a risk your vote, protect your vote mechanism. If Shan and Liana end up, if this island is just Exile Island and they end there together, they have formed a bond. And I feel like everybody else has gone, even, you know, Evie and Deshaun did not work together, right? Evie gives Deshaun an advantage on a silver platter. And so I think that, like, it's actually more important the conversation you have before you risk your vote, right? Like, that, how well you can develop that relationship means much more than what ends up happening on the risk your vote, protect your vote. Because even you could see a world where the two of them later are still around. They go, yeah, that was a big mistake that we both like risked our vote, right? Like, it doesn't, like, I don't know if they'll be mad at each other. They'll be like, wow, that was really dumb of me to like think that I could risk my vote. But I think, yeah, that's like really the only time where I've seen the Shipwell Island. And it's new, you know, there has not been a ton of that. But Shan and Leon are kind of the only pair that come out of Shipwell Island being like, yeah, I have a new ally. I feel like 100%.
Danny did tell me when I interviewed him at the end of 41 that, like, he said he and Xander were like kind of tight, or like talked to each other, at least built some sort of dynamic when they went to Shipwell Island in the beginning of 41. But I also think it's a little different going in the very beginning, right? Going in the first few days, as opposed to Shan and Liana went right before the merge happened. And so I think that also helped as well, that they built this relationship and then they immediately cash in on it by being able to see each other the next day. Who knows? I mean, I think we're probably going to have two more votes, I think, before the merge happens in this season. So that might be enough time to sort of have them let bygones be bygones, or maybe they come at each other being like, this son of a bitch got my vote gone. I'm going to get rid of them now.
Oh my God. Well, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because then the first thing I think of is also the hit idol. The tridle.
Yes.
Because there's also going to be hits out for the people on that as well. So
are you talking about that or the amulet?
The amulet. Yeah. The triple idol amulet advantage amulet thing, right? Yeah. That's what's advantage amulet.
I still don't know what it is and what it does.
I think it was very much like a bookmark, right? They're like, okay, this is only good for the merge, so like we'll talk about this later on. Basically it'll become only important if some combination of Hi, Drea, and Lindsay end up making the merge anyway. Yeah. So they're just like, we'll introduce this in the beginning and we'll check back on it. It's like putting like a casserole in the oven. Like, we'll set that for an hour and we'll check back on it to make sure it's fine.
It's very fun. I think this all of these advantages and twists, like, it's so funny. I'm talking about my mom a lot on this podcast, it's hilarious. But I had a conversation with my mom this morning and she's like, yeah, I had to go be finding the extra. Like, I had to find the exit interview. I had to find all that. Like, she does not normally listen to all this. So she's like, I did not understand what happened at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. My mom was like digging into the extracurriculars to figure
That's
out
interesting.
What happened. Yeah.
Because I do feel like, you know, there has been some talk, obviously, about like the, was Jenny screwed by twists, et cetera, et cetera. I did find it interesting, though, that I thought a lot of fans were saying, like, okay, this is like the final six of Cambodia, where like it was complicated, but like we could see the rationale behind it. So I do find it interesting that it was still fairly confusing for some people. But
you're right, Mike. My mom is not smart. That's right.
No.
I'm just kidding.
That's crazy. Real super fans would understand it. So guess
Nora,
your mom's stupid.
No, that's not. I mean, listen, there. We were just talking about Tri Idol Advantage Amulet.
Yes.
Where we're like,
I know. I don't get it. So it's fine. Yeah. Yeah,
but I just find it interesting because I don't know. Did we find that this was easy to understand to some people's points, or was this, to your mom's point, like something that was fairly difficult, considering we haven't really had a situation before where it's like a tribe this small where multiple people have no votes?
I even found myself like I figured it out pretty good, but I'm even on the I'm like, how is it a 1-1? Because I was like, oh, it's going to be 2-0 on the
where are the votes?
Like, no wait, it is one. It will be 1-1. So like, yeah, but I don't know what else they do. I don't know what they do. I really like the like mechanism of losing your vote. I think it's one of the better things that they've done recently. Like, I don't know, do we need like the Chiron back with like the, like, does not have a vote to skip tribal council?
I
don't
do
know
that for Mike
had one
do.
Yeah, he had no vote.
But during tribal, I mean, yeah, I
oh
like,
yeah. Like,
oh, you know,
so
what we
yeah.
need
yeah.
we need like the John Madden as like someone right on the screen, no vote, pointing to him.
Well, Jeff has had
Jeff
the whiteboard before.
Yeah.
But we need it during tribal council. We need like pop-up video.
Put Robin Sander in the booth.
Yeah.
They're the color, the Joe Buck of it all, the color commentator.
I mean, it is kind of, there is this thing that, like, to be fair to the Robin Sander thing, it does seem kind of silly to have them, like, sitting in the booth. But there is a way in which, like, it actually does have. So if, like, they're sitting there and they're like, you know, oh, yeah, we're doing this thing. And then, like, Rob can leave and be like, yeah, Chanel doesn't have a vote. You know, like, it could, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to simplify it too much. But
yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm probably the wrong person to ask, but like, yeah, it made sense. But that's because I spend hours every week thinking, talking about the show, listening to podcasts about the show. So like for me, yeah. But I understand, Grace, like why, especially if you only give this show an hour of your attention every week and you're not really thinking about it. Yeah, of course, you're going to forget things that happen, right? And they're not doing the previously on. So like you're going to miss the, oh, these are the things that were important in the past that set up for, you know, this episode. Right, which would be like Mike not having his vote, for example, would be like, ah, yes, a reminder. So I know that we're going into this tribal council where only five people could vote because you would be reminded of that. But that doesn't happen.
Also, think about how you might watch a show that's like not your favorite show on TV. Like, yeah, I'm also might be on my phone, you know, like, and that's kind of my mom, right? Like Chiron being on the screen actually doesn't matter if like my mom is also playing Candy Crush.
Someone needs to yell it.
Yeah.
Hey, look up. Here's the important thing that you need to remember. This is the Cliffs Notes of going into Tribal Town. Well, I think also the issue was that, look, when we go to Tribal Council at 8:40, you know, like shit is going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think maybe one of the issues is you could understand like the situation going into the vote. But then when the vote ties and we like immediately go into the revote, like sometimes your brain doesn't make the logical leap of, OK, and now Chanel and Mike can't vote again. That was very funny for them to have to get up a second time and be like, rip. And then we have, again, another unprecedented situation where Jeff has to be the teacher and be like, okay, I'm going to turn my back and whoever has an advantage has to stand up and say who they were or the whole class is going to get in trouble.
The other thing too is like, there's a world, this is not like ruining my mom's enjoyment of the show. She's actually oh, I'm going to go find some extra thing and like kind of figure out. She'll be back next week. She'll be watching. And I do think sometimes like, as podcasts, I'm like feeling like I'm being very critical of like after every episode we come here and we like talk about the show for hours. This is not the entirety of the show, right? Next week they'll come back and there might be a segment. The first thing's like, here's exactly what happened last week at like the tribal council, you know, like, you know, it's a, we're not seeing the full picture yet, which sometimes we're like very critical. Like, how is this season going? It's like, it's three episodes of like 10, 12, 13 episodes, you know? So,
Okay. So we're going to talk a lot about the tribal councils. later. So like we'll get into to all of that. So I just want to mention a few more things before we like talk about our predictions and the bracket and all that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jonathan's Challenge Beast performance. I'm sorry, but that was so impressive. I'm impressed. When he was like, yeah, I can do pull-ups with 100 pounds on my back. I was like, yeah, whatever. And then I was like, okay, I'm convinced. This is amazing. You're amazing. I'm like,
I mean, he is Thor. Like, yeah. He is literally, if he came out, he's like, actually, I got something to tell you, everybody. I'm a god.
Well, he's Aquaman, I guess, right?
I guess he is Aquaman, but he's like, I'm from Atlantis. I'm a merman.
I get it.
Okay, I'm going to say something, and I don't believe it, but I'm just going to say it just for fun. Do you think this gives credence to Steven's assessment, Steven, that like this cast is just super unathletic? And so Jonathan is actually like a regular challenge performer, but like that challenge is not even actually that hard. But because this season is full of not people who are super athletic, they're like, well, stop the show. And Jonathan does look like a god, but like anybody else in another season.
Yeah, in the Kingdom of the Blind, the one-eyed man is king, right? You put him next to, like, Colby Donaldson and Mike Holloway, he just gets his ass beat. It's like, oh, my God. Well, all right.
Wow, yeah.
Jonathan was the kid that stayed behind in third grade, and so now he's, like, the biggest third grader.
Maybe that is the case. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it's, like, by comparison, you know, who knows? I think the thing is that, like, he's just so tall. And he's just so muscular, though, you know, like I kind of can't get over it.
Well, here's the thing. They talk about like the swimming things, but was he so tall that he was just walking? That's why it was so easy for him. He's like, well, my feet touch the ground where I come from in the sands in which I was born. So naturally, I just come fish, carry the ladder for me.
Oh, he's like a Disney princess. He like gets the animals to like come do it for him.
Octopus, grab Omer.
Yes. Oh my god, I was losing my freaking mind when he like went and just collected his tribe mates. There was, for some reason, that was just like the most amusing thing in the entire world to me, of the fact that Jonathan has to like go get all herd all his cats and just like pull them, like, all right, come on over here.
When Omar's very far away and he's just like, Omar, come here, as if Omar is not trying to come there.
Yeah, exactly.
Omar, come on.
Come this way.
I love it. But I also love it. It's a weird thing. And now this has happened like in two Survivor seasons in a year. Spoiler alert, a bit for Survivor South Africa. But there was a challenge that took place in like a pretty raging river. And there was one contestant that like, unlike Taku, they ended up losing the challenge. But it was because this one guy had to like go back and save a couple of its team members who were struggling in the water. And so like it's wild that this has happened. And look, let me also say at the top, and Jeff Probst talked about this in an interview with Dalton Ross, like they were never truly, truly in danger, right? There was like a team of divers there. If they wanted help, they would have said it and the divers would have come out and helped. We saw this what happened with Tasha in Cambodia, right? That like she was struggling, she asked for help, a diver came in. So it's not like they're saying, all right, good luck out there. If you drown, we'll bring your loved ones out for your funeral here in Fiji. There were people on the side that were going to look after it. It just so happens that like they felt okay with it at the time, but maybe they were just so distracted by Jonathan single-handedly whipping his team and a fully grown ladder back onto the beach and like basically winning the challenge all by himself.
A fully grown ladder, as opposed to a little baby ladder. It hasn't grown up yet.
Yeah, it's a step stool, right? Step stool is a baby ladder. Prepubescent ladder.
They really got a lot of juice out of the Rocks Roy's head almost ends up in the ladder rung shot. It's in the preview. He's gonna like that. Actually like drown and choke by the ladder.
Okay, that was a fabulous moment. And then the other moment that, and this was maybe, I blinked and missed it, but when Marianne dropped her phrase, I didn't even notice. I was like, I'm going to learn something from you. You must surround your random phrase in nonsense. So then that way the phrase itself is just nonsense already.
Can't have your phrase stick out if you're already talking nonsense the entire season.
True.
There you go. Exactly. It felt like her previous two episodes were also preparation somehow for dropping the line.
Well, this brings up a theory for me, because it has apparently come out as of late, right, that like Erica may or may not have been responsible for the whole monster thing, right? She had said that she made the monster analogy on the final day of 41, and Jeff Brandt brought it up at the reunion. They had never heard it before, and then he brought it up all in the marketing, brought it up at the beginning of 42. Could it be that Marianne had like sort of incepted this idea, and then they went back in time to put it in the beginning of 41 of like, all right, we're going to have this real weirdo on season 42. So like, let's give everyone a reason to talk nonsense for two seasons to build up to that moment.
She told this weird story about a bunny rabbit. I think we could figure something out with this.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Yeah, in casting, right? Did they do all the casting together? And she tells the story. Like, that's great. We should have everybody who's saying stupid phrases.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to say. Let's make everybody do that. That's where the idea came from.
I love that idea of like, okay, you said something stupid. All right, well, now we're going to turn this into a twist.
What if we made everybody say something stupid? Her line, though, is tough.
Yeah, what is it?
Hers is, I think this is what it is, but it's another classic case of the bunny rabbit having dinner in the mailbox.
Yeah.
That's so much harder than the soccer one.
Thank you.
And I'm a big fan of the soccer one. It has my name in it. But, you know.
That's true. There is such grace in the game of soccer.
Yeah. Did you play soccer?
I did play, a little. I coach soccer. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so there is such grace.
Do you know what? I coach soccer, and I coach 2.5 to 3 to 4-year-olds, and it's exactly like how Omar had to wrangle his team.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well,
which way do you kick the ball? That way? Okay, great. Go all run in that one direction.
Little kid really soccer is the cutest.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to putting Asher into soccer just so I can experience that. Maybe I'll be the job and be like, picking him up like, come here, let's go get that ball. I don't know if they'd allow me to play soccer with a 2.5-year-old.
No, I don't think that's how they play.
I would be like the Jonathan again, very like athletic compared to the rest of the cast.
Yeah, if you're playing in it, you would look like the Jonathan.
Yeah, a grown human male versus 2-year-old. Yeah, no, I get that. That's a little bit of a size difference.
I agree, though. This phrase is maybe the hardest one out of all six. We talked about this last week, right? That like broccoli, I thought was actually a fairly big of a layup because of like the food stuff. This, first of all, doesn't make sense as a sentence. Like the other ones are kind of goofy thoughts. This is completely made up. Another classic case of the bunny rabbit having dinner in the mailbox. That's not a thing. That's not a story. That's not a metaphor. That's nothing.
I think though there is like Mike's going to have to say this like soccer phrase. It's really going to feel like it's out of nowhere, right? Like I guess it's a challenge. I guess there are ways to work it in, but it's almost like the ones that are way off board. You just have to just say them and then just hope that everyone's like, wow, that was weird, huh? You know,
the other one we have is the potato one, which
I'm very surprised they saved that one for last.
What do you mean?
Because that's the last one. Like we already have the other two.
Yeah, but they
just found them.
They didn't.
Really? I thought it was that you have to say them in a specific. I thought it was like the first person who found it had the butterflies. The second person had the broccoli. The third one had the astroturf.
I thought it was, this is your phrase, and here are the other two phrases.
Like matter who found it.
I think that's the way the note is written.
I think they should have phrased it where they should have, and maybe you write like three different versions and hide it based on like who finds what when. I think there should be an advantage for the first person who finds the idol to have the easiest phrase. And then the last person to find it should have the hardest.
Wait,
phrase.
But then what if Mike has like, I guess he's just always going to prepare statement number three. But what if you're like ready to jump in with statement number two and then somebody else does statement number two and now you're statement number three?
Well, that's why you provide like crap. Well, that's why I think like after Mike, like you have all versions of, okay, soccer. And then once soccer is found, then you're like, okay, we'll switch out the other ones for bunny, and then when bunny gets found, they're like, okay, we'll switch it out. It's much more work, but I don't know. I like the idea of, well, you were the last one to find it, so your disadvantage is like you have to say the hardest phrase out of the three, because otherwise it is just the luck of the draw.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the one from at least season 41, and it says your phrase blah blah blah, the other two phrases blah 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 blah. So that's how they do it. Also, it says if all three shared idols are not found by merge, the vote penalty ends and your idol is forever dead. But if all shared idols are found but not activated, what happens?
So they change that, right?
Yeah, this is the rule that they changed. So this is like Daniel's epiphany that quote unquote saves Mike this episode, right? Is that he says for this season, if all the idols aren't found, whatever idols are found are activated by the merge, no matter what.
Right.
Which makes sense. I know I said this to Evie as well on Twitter that like, I have a feeling as much as we liked no idols being played correctly in season 41, I have a feeling production did not. So they're like, okay, let's make sure that there are idols in the game and let's have some stuff being played. So, and I could also imagine that they were maybe a little worried in 41 when it took Nasir a good amount of time to find that idol, right? They're like, oh crap, we might have no idols in this season. We can't do that. I know we're drop the four, keep the one, but we got to have some element of idols in there. So I would imagine it's a little bit like Sweat versus Savvy, right? Where they were like trying to push one specific decision. I can imagine them tweaking things slightly to say, no matter what, we got to have idols at the merge, even if all the phrases aren't found.
I like it because I like the fact that Mike is in this very interesting position now where he was thinking, I think I'm in such a good spot that I could go through the whole pre-merge without ever having my vote. That's like a calculated decision he's thinking he can make. But even if the other two people say their phrases, it seems to me that he's saying, yeah, maybe I won't say my phrase because then they don't have votes during the pre-merge, and I'll never have, nobody will ever know that like I'm the other, like they'll never know that I'm the other person. And now he's in this position where theoretically he's at, you know, the bottom with Chanel, kind of, maybe we'll see.
I don't know.
He has to make this decision now.
I don't even know if he's with Chanel at this point.
I know. I don't think they're together. I've said at the bottom, kind of like they're separately at the bottom. But yeah, now he has to make this decision of like, if he hears the other two phrases, he should probably say it. He should probably get his vote back and get an idol. But he was thinking, yeah, I'll go through the whole pre-merge, not have my vote. So it's interesting.
I think also then, because he heard, so obviously he heard Marianne's phrase, but yeah, then he was like, but I'm going to wait until I hear that third phrase to say my phrase. So he better hope that whoever on Ika finds that idol is willing to say the phrase and is not going to do the same thing that he did. Because, I mean, true, or maybe he, like you said, Grace, like maybe he doesn't care and he's like, that's fine with me, I'll just wait.
What I think he cares now, but I don't think he was thinking going into this, like, yeah, I'm not going to say the third phrase even if two other people say it.
Well, if for all intents and purposes, though, like he could have been right because they went into this tribal council with a 4-2 majority because of what Chanel did. Now they leave essentially like a 2-1-1-1, essentially, is the dynamic now at Vati. To that point, though, I found it so interesting that Daniel was like, well, we can't vote off Mike now because like then that screws us over. When like we see, and again, we have the benefit of watching last season, but like when Brad was voted out, right, they just found the idol again. Yeah. Like it could be as simple as that. And you might be the only one who has access to that knowledge. I mean, we should also mention here that when it came down to it, I mean, many mistakes were made in this episode, deliciously so. But one of the most paramount ones was the vote should have been Mike. It should not have been Jenny. If you are that 4-person majority, that's what you've got to do. Because if you think about it, if Mike doesn't have a vote, and Chanel possibly doesn't have a vote, right? Because we don't know until tribal council. You have High and Lydia put their votes onto Mike, either like in a split vote scenario, like convince them there's a split going on or whatever. That way, if Chanel does lose her vote, it's a 2-2. And the people voting in the revote are High, Jenny, Daniel, and Chanel. And if Chanel still doesn't have her vote, you still have Daniel and Jenny to vote out Lydia. And then you're done, right? 2-1 on the revote. That happens. No rocks drawn. But whether either they just couldn't convince High and Lydia to vote for Mike specifically, or they just decided at that moment, like, I think it's fine to have them vote for Jenny. You know, Chanel still probably has a vote. They, for some reason, did not go in that direction. So I feel like probably easier said than done. But from like an objective perspective, if you're in that majority, you got to get the votes on Mike so that you carry through on the revote, even if something shiesty happens.
But the majority didn't want Mike to go. The majority wanted Lydia to go home, right?
Yeah, but I think okay, it's just in the event of a tie, right?
Yeah.
So it's not so when Mike says majority, if I'm understanding you correctly, you just mean you need the other side. The majority needs the other side to put their votes on Mike.
Exactly.
In case of a tie.
They needed Mike and Lydia to split their votes in order to vote Lydia out. Right?
You could have had two ways to do this in order to get around the revote, right? Is exactly what you're saying, Grace, where you have them split their votes. So then that 2-1-1. Yes, exactly. So by split votes, you have Lydia and High split their votes. So then the majority is Daniel and Jenny, right? Voting for someone else. But if you can't get them to do that, if you can get two votes on Mike, so then it's two votes Mike, two votes Lydia. Because the majority of Daniel and Jenny are still voting Lydia, then that's who the tie is between. So then the other people who are voting, as Mike mentioned, were Chanel, who can't vote, so it doesn't matter. But now Jenny can vote because she's not in the tie. So now right. Jenny, Daniel, those are the two that have the vote, and High is the one on the outs.
The idea here is that like the decoy plan should have been all votes on Mike.
Exactly.
Don't split your vote. Yes. All votes on Mike. We'll vote Robert. Yes. Because where this plan ends up like breaking down, and I actually think it's, you know, when you think about like High's tribal council performance, there's this really interesting thing where somebody was noting, I think it was Steven, that like he almost was like in mid-game form in terms of like, this is his first tribal council. And for him to like trust his gut this much, when really like most people will go into that first tribal council just, I just need to like prove my loyalty to whoever I need to prove. Mm-hmm. And he switches his plan seemingly from what the edit that we've been given, that he notices that something is up with Dan and that Chanel and Dan are communicating and it seems like it's going to go Lydia. So he switches his vote to save Lydia. It's very like, you know, not typical, I think, of first tribal council behavior. So.
Yeah, and it's tough because, again, like strategically, that is the conducive thing to do is convince High and Lydia to put their votes onto Mike. Mm-hmm. Now, easier said than done, because as Jenny talked about, like Mike was probably their strongest challenge performer.
Yes.
And that's really tough to do. I know that High was sort of complaining that Jenny and Mike were trying to target Lydia for her challenge performance. But like even in this hyper vigilant strategic new era of Survivor, I still think it's very tough to say, hey, Mike's the one that has really won us a lot of challenges so far. Let's get rid of him.
Yes.
And so I can imagine that's a really tough sell that had them ultimately settling on Jenny, who was very good in puzzles, but like at the same time was probably lacking in the brute force that Mike provided. So again, strategically incredibly complicated on its own, but I do think that was the plan they could have done, but I'm so happy they did it. Not for Jenny's sake, but just because of all the nonsense that broke out at Tribal Council.
I think also it would have been really hard to convince them to go Mike in this instance after you have that challenge that just happened where you nearly drowned in the ocean and you just saw how valuable a huge physical person can be on your tribe. So, yeah, I could understand why that would be a near impossible thing to do.
Yeah, it was just, we're going to get so much into this Tribal Council.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
Ridiculous. This was, again, they nearly went to rocks. They almost pulled a Survivor South Africa in episode 3. I thought we were going there for a hot second, but Daniel Strunk was able to talk, get out of it while still also making fantastic TV at the same time.
I love it. I love that he should have just swapped his vote on the revote, right? Doesn't he know? How can he possibly think that anything else is going to happen? So he should. I love that he does it because if we get like his moment at Tribal Council where now she was like, throwing me under the bus, he's saying she threw him under the bus. Like, I love it, but I'm not really sure why he doesn't just vote out Jenny on the revote.
Okay,
but
let's do our predictions so we can talk about the tribal councils.
Okay, all right.
So much to talk about that tribal council.
let's talk about Jenny here. So yeah, so as we did usually do, we had written down our predictions for each person pre-season. Jenny is an interesting one, right? The Twitter flags are like flying half-mast at this point for Jenny Kim. She was a big favorite in the pre-merge. Liana, were you part of the throng or did you go your own way?
Okay, so I had her at the finale. Specifically, I had her in that like fifth place slot, assuming that there's going to be a final five. So here's what I said about Jenny. I said, pre-jury, Jenny is never in danger as the beacon of calmness on the Green Tribe, corralling erratic players like Mike, Lydia, and Daniel. Come jury, she becomes the unnamed strategic nexus, directing the tribe to target physical threats. But sadly, her reign comes to an end when at the final five, they wake up and realize they have no chance against her in the final three. Despite her central role in the season, Jenny still gets a purple edit. Shout out to the editors there. And I said that she did not use her shot in the dark because she couldn't, I think, right? At final five, you can't use
Yeah, it's all done at like, yeah. It ended at like final seven last time, I think.
And then I said that her closest allies would be Drea and Chanel, and her enemy is Omar.
Ooh, okay. Well, / the Brant Steele that did this for me had Jenny going pre-merge.
Oh, okay.
I said that she makes a quick bond with High. It says she leaves the anti-Chanel alliance in episode 3 and starts to bond with her. So I guess there was some sort of anti-Chanel alliance brewing on Vati. There was a swap that I put in my particular simulator. So she forms a post-swap alliance with Chanel and Zach, and she gets idled out by Mike after playing her shot in the dark, having never cast a vote. Her closest ally is Chanel and Zach. Her enemy is Mike. And the randomly generated phrase I had for Jenny Kim was, "Hand me the hammer."
Speaking of Thor.
I love it. Yeah. Like, we got to vote that person out? Hand me the hammer. I'll do it.
Well, maybe it's that if Jenny could have smashed the hourglass and, like, turned back time on that tribal council, she would have.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I feel the simulator has gotten the better of me.
What do you think, Grace?
Yeah, no, it's, I think the simulator has Jenny going pre-merge. Oh, without casting a vote. It's very interesting stuff happening in there. I kind of love that your prediction, and it was very Allison Rabel from David versus Goliath, like sort of very purpley. Seem to maybe, if you read into it, a little bit more in control than the edit gives him credit for, and goes out of the final five. So that would have been fun for Jenny. I was very sad to see Jenny
Well, can we talk about that for a second? Because it does feel like a strong reaction for Jenny's boot. Why do we think that is? Is it like the likability of Jenny? Is it the circumstances that led to her being booted? Because I do. Honestly, I do wonder if it was Daniel that left in her spot, if like the exact circumstances happened, but like sub the two of them out, would it produce the same reaction as it did with Jenny from this fandom?
I think a similar like, oh, that sucks that like it's Daniel who's gone. But I think from a gameplay perspective, I feel like Jenny did much wrong to end up being voted out in this situation. I think Jenny comes out, I think, with a really strong a premiere episode where everybody's trying to do the triangles and she's like, no, wait, like you're all wrong. Like, let me do it. And just immediately like showed to be herself to be very smart to us, the audience. And I think there was like a lot of potential there. I do think this is like somebody who it kind of sucks that probably a lot of these people who end up like in this spot will not end up back at some point, because I think Jenny showed herself to be a pretty capable player, and in just such a small tribe and these like the loss of votes, like she was in the majority and she ends up being voted out. And that's I think where sort of there's this like it doesn't feel fair to Jenny, as much as we liked the episode, and I thought it was a really fun episode, there's lots to dive into. I feel like Jenny just sort of ends up being a casualty of what happened rather than her being the reason she got voted out.
I think her puzzle prowess, I think her kind of being in the majority, but I also think that the read on Shipwheel Island also impressed a lot of people, myself included, that was like, I have this correct read of these two people, because this is the first time they are being presented with Shipwheel Island, right? So they have no knowledge, no information, and she correctly reads both of the people that she's with. That's also super impressive. So you feel like you have someone who's in the this like strong female in the majority, like puzzle prowess on lock, just like, oh my God, yes, I'm so excited for you. Like, that's definitely how I felt. It's like, yes, come on, like, kill it. She's also an older woman, which, it's just, I like want to see a players like her succeed. And so to have it cut short was definitely very heartbreaking, even though to me, the episode was entertaining.
Yeah, we're starting to lose some oldies here between Jackson.
You mean later days? Sorry, let's be clear.
But between Mariah and Jackson and now Jenny, like they were all in their 40s. All we have left, I think, so we have Mike, who is obviously the oldest player in the season, only one in his 50s. But other than that, Roxroy is in his 40s, and that's it. So we're starting to see a bit of like a culling of let the young survive. This is a young man's game.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like the challenges and the lack of food and like that kind of stuff that's making people lean that way. Although really, like, of the three votes, Jenny's was an anomaly, right? Because of the like wacko stuff going on. Zach was voted out and Mariah was voted out. So really, we just have sort of two data points to go with. So I don't know.
Well, Zach was 54. That's the one thing that surprises people. Yeah. About his vote. Yeah, he's very old.
They didn't show, but actually his hip broke while he was going like, oh, no.
That's right.
I'm trying to get the dice out of it, but I can't reach it. That
must have
bones.
Had a lot of Botox. Got it.
Yeah, Zach had a lot of work done. I'm a student. He was pretending to be a student.
The Steve Buscemi. Hello, fellow young people. Yeah.
Oh, gotta get back to my studies. The other interesting thing, though, is that I do think age was a bit of a factor, though, where, Mariah and Jackson were really tight on Taku. And, Mariah had told me that just like they found a real synergy with each other. I think Jenny and Mike connected very similarly. And I wonder if it's just a matter of, again, that like energy that they carry, right? Of when you are older and you have more life experience, when you're in an experience like this, there's much more like cockeyed optimism coming from people that are younger, like a Marianne. And then you have everyone else like same shit, different day, essentially. And that's what causes older people to bond on these seasons.
Roxroy also hates the young people. They sing too much. So
makes sense. This tale is old as time. Survivor Africa, the young versus the old.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. That was what happens. Talk about going to rocks on day seven. Remember when they went to like a deadlock tiebreaker on day nine in Survivor Africa?
It's true.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more about this tribal council in our game this week, which I am very excited for. Now, Grace, on the Offspeed podcast, you cover all things sports. And I should mention, we are at the tail end, the later days, if you will, of March, but it is still March Madness. I should say I have been very much an outsider on all this, but from what I've been hearing, March Madness is not unlike this season of Survivor in that there's just a lot of wackiness going on, is there not?
Yeah, there's a team, I believe they're called St. Peter's. They are the first 15th seed to ever make it into the Elite Eight. So it's the furthest this seed has ever gone. So I feel like a lot of people are watching it just to like keep hoping that they win, which has been fun. Yeah. So, yeah.
What's the equivalent of that, Liana, from like is that like a Chris Underwood thing from a Survivor perspective?
Ooh. Yeah, maybe if it's like a double elimination bracket, the winner of the double elimination bracket like comes back and wins the whole thing. For this, I don't know. Yeah, it's just like the underdog that keeps surviving time after time again.
Yeah, maybe it's like a Kathy Vabrick O'Brien situation, right? Where like you thought they were guaranteed to be the first boot from their tribe, and then like they end up making it to the finale. You're like, oh, look at this. Look how far we've come. Maybe that's the case here with St. Peter Harkies.
Very holy.
Yeah, they haven't won yet, so I don't think we can call them the Chris Underwood, but yeah, the Kathy Vabrick O'Brien comp is good.
Yeah, that's
good. Yeah.
So good analogy. So in honor of March Madness, since we are in March, and this is also the Erica month, we should say, we are in like a lion, out like a lamb, so I find that very interesting. We have concocted a bracket of bad tribal council moments. So to clarify what this means, I think we sort of typified this as like moments at tribal council which are like either cringy and or involve someone putting their foot in their mouth and or had game ramifications for the person or parties involved. So it's a very general category, but I decided not to include things like final tribal council moments. I feel like that could be a different thing in and of itself, but what we were able to do, and special thanks to the Twitterverse out there, the Twitter proletariat, for being able to like send me a bunch of moments that even I didn't remember. I have compiled 12 moments from throughout Survivor history that are you could probably call quote unquote bad TC moments. I have randomized their seating. I put them in a bracket. Sorry, Renap, we're taking bracket season. I think Renap's fine to get rid of bracket season for the moment and foist it onto the B&B. But we are going to try to do our own bracket here between the three of us to try to figure out which is perhaps the worst bad tribal council moment in Survivor history.
I'm excited. I feel like you mentioned, it's a little bit of a catch-all in terms of what defines bad. And so I'm very curious, because I know that I have sort of my angle of where I think what to me is like the baddest moment. So I think this is going to be a very interesting discussion.
Yeah. Okay. This will be fun.
Yeah. Grace, what are your thoughts on it? Are you, what are you looking to define, I guess, in your own criteria when it comes to what makes a bad tribal council moment?
Yeah, so I don't want to say like this is my hierarchy, like if this thing happens, that's for sure means it's worse than the other one, because I think that people could just like then take the bracket and fill it themselves if I give you that criteria. But I think I do weigh pretty heavily, like, are you the person who ends up like basically being voted out? That's like probably, and I think how much your stock changes, your position changes during the tribal council. If this is the stock watch, like, should I have sold high right before you made this blunder? That's probably a good indication.
You know, they say buy high, sell low.
I should sell high, right? If you have a blunder, I should have sold right before you have a blunder. I should sell all my stock on you.
Yeah.
Because then you should have bought high.
You want to buy high, sell Lodia, right?
Why would you sell low? If you sell low, aren't you? You're not making very much money on your stocks.
No? Yeah, that's more so like a wimping out, right? Of being like, I'm done. Just mercy.
You do want to sell high, no? You want
to
sell
high? No, but that's what I need to see. Okay, you mean high like H-I-G-H, not H-A-I. Yeah. Oh, I'm saying high.
High's on
first. This conversation needs to be transcribed because in words, it does not, like loud does not work.
Yeah, it's I
like
do not mean the Survivor contestant like, high. Yeah, I do.
No, you want to buy Brenda Lowe and you want to sell high if we're talking about Survivor contestants.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, let's get into the bracket here. Okay. So can you see the brackets? We got everything up here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So, and people are following along with this on video. If not, I'm going to talk through each of these moments. Now, since there are 12 moments, we do have some play-ins here. So there will be some invaders, I guess I should say, or intruders, I think is what the Australian reality shows use for terms that'll like jump in almost like Chris Underwood style, St. Peter style to take things over. But let's go through this first round of matchups. Again, I will also say the seeding is randomized. So apologies if, you know, we did not necessarily tier things in the way that they should be. This is not outwit out play out list. Also apologies if we did not cover a moment that you wanted in terms of bad tribal council moments. Again, we got a lot of responses, so I tried to cull together what I think best fits the category while also providing for the best discussion here. So let's start with the first matchup. We have from Survivor Redemption Island, the very first tribal council. Remember, Redemption Island was good for like 3 or 4 episodes. The very, very first episode, there was a plan between Philip, Christina, and Francesca for essentially like Christina to play the idol that she found to idol out Boston Rob. There is an answer, I believe, that Francesca and Christina give at tribal council that Philip takes the wrong way. He proceeds to then completely out the plan that he was part of to try to like essentially curry favor with Boston Rob because he is so angry at Christina and Francesca, including revealing that Christina has the idol. The other option that is up against is Survivor Game Changers, which actually this episode aired 5 years ago this past week. And my finger will never let me forget it, where in the shared tribal council in episode 4, JT gets up, walks over to the other tribe and whispers to Brad Culpepper, which then starts a flurry of chaos that leads to the unceremonious boot, but entertaining nonetheless, of one Malcolm Freeburg. So, Liana, between Philip revealing the idol and JT starting the whisper fest that is modern day Survivor, which one to you is the worst TC moment?
This is so tough. Like, this is a really tough matchup for the first round because I think that both bad moments are gameplay related, which, okay, that's like my criteria that I'm going to be going off of. Sorry, spoiler alert. And it's like, I tried to go based on like, because I rewatched all of these and I was like, which one am I more captivated by? That was like what I went off of. And there's something about Philip that is just like...
I love that movie.
Yeah, I know, right? Something about Philip. It's just so captivating because all Francesca says is like, yeah, and you know, Boston Rob definitely not going home tonight. And he's like, wait, hold on. And he just all of a sudden spills everything. It was, I don't know. It was just, there was something so incredibly entertaining. I could be swayed, but my like gut is telling me to go with the Redemption Island moment.
So I'm the other way because if this is bad tribal council moment, I think I'm choosing the ones that is worse for the person who this is a bad tribal council for.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
So I think Phillips is very interesting when I talk about stock. I think his stock drops dramatically in terms of like his position as somebody you can work with in the game, except for Boston Rob, who Phillips stock shoots to the moon. Like, this is the guy I want to take all the way to the end. And so Philip like ruins the, it's a bad tribal council in terms of the plan that he comes into tribal council wanting to execute, but he comes out of it in a much better position. Maybe that's results oriented he's then going to get, he becomes Boston Rob's goat to the end, where JT blows up a plan that would have sent home somebody that he wasn't working with. And what he ends up doing ends up somebody who he is aligned with in Malcolm. So yeah,
that's true. And like, that's the thing is you could say that Francesca, Christina and Philip didn't really have a leg to stand on anyway. So it's like they went from in a bad position to an even worse position. Whereas like JT sent home an ally because of what he did. So oops.
Remember, and there's something about Philip when Ben Stiller takes him on a date and he says, oh, is that hair gel? And then he has a big feather sticking up out of his head the entire time on the date.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we all remember that. Yeah. How long are you holding on to that joke?
2 minutes.
Yeah.
I do want to see the world in which Philip got Boston Rob idled out of the game and how that like influences his character in that season, like who he plays. That is a very interesting multiverse possibility where like he's like playing, trying to play as like the bot, like the guy who got Boston Rob out would be fascinating to me.
To that point, I would imagine that Ometepe loses a fair amount of challenge, and I would not be surprised to see Philip be on a pre-jury trip with Boston Rob, because like they did not like him, and so I couldn't imagine a situation where like they idle out Boston Rob. Philip, Francesca, and Christina are still on the bottom there. You know, because they were still fairly ostracized. And then I think at that point, if they're gunning for who they want to get rid of, they don't have Boston Rob being like, we should keep around Philip. Nobody likes him. They're gonna be like, screw you, Philip, get your underwear out of here, dude. And so they just boot him instead. So it'd be interesting. I think actually it ends up much better for both Ross and Rob and Philip in their legacies that Philip ends up spilling the beans here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I also, in this tribal council, Jeff like straight up asks if you have it, like if Christina has the immunity idol, which I thought was very interesting. Like, can you ask that, Jeff? Can you even ask that question? can you ask people if they have an idol?
Jeff, that was don't ask people if they have the idol.
Yeah.
Not now, Jeff. Later. You ask after the votes have
been read. Right. That's not the time. You're messing it up. In the Game Changers Tribal Council, I don't know why this line made me laugh, and I don't know if this is going to factor into my decision at all, but Brad Culpepper is like, we in the business call this a Mexican standoff. It's like, what business? The like decorating.
He's a lawyer at the time, was he?
Yeah, but I don't think even the lawyers are like, listen, maybe I missed out a couple seasons of Better Call Saul, but I don't think they're like calling things the Mexican standoff.
We in the business. There's just something about that like, I love that. And then we also get the Haley moment where she's like, I did not consent to voting, which is also very classic. The one thing that I just don't like about that Game Changers tribal is all the whispering, but that was sort of like a mark of Game Changers in general. So
it sets off many, many tribal council moments that are not fun. So,
and so for that reason, I'm gonna go with JT here, because I feel like, unfortunately, this doesn't, it's kind of unfair to say, because again, like the moment in and of itself has a lot of weight to it, but the fact that JT truly proved himself a game changer, ironically enough, in that moment, by now having contestants be like, I didn't know we could get up out of our seats. I'm gonna get up out of my seat and walk over. That's going to lead to at least one other moment that we're going to talk about on this very list. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I like Grace's points too about like what happens thereafter, right? I think JT is not the next boot from that tribe if he doesn't do this in this moment. This causes Ty to play his idol, in which he's going to find, you know, two more, and that's going to lead to advantage get in. So, I mean, JT really is like the causer of a lot of Nexus events right now, in this very moment.
Ah, so JT is to blame for Suri. Got it. Okay, good to know.
Exactly. All right, so by a 2-1, JT has advanced to the next round. Our next two moments here, we are going back not so far, the truth bomb from last season. If you recall, in Survivor 41, in the penultimate episode, Deshaun thinks he's in danger, so he drops a quote-unquote truth bomb that Erica had never wanted to go to the end with Heather, and chaos ensues thusly, mostly just a lot of blowback against Deshaun. Versus in Survivor Philippines, during a particularly chaotic tribal council where Malcolm essentially has to reveal that he has his immunity idol, Abby Maria, for whatever reason, just says, oh, I have one too. And there's no rationale behind it. No one was even looking her direction. The only people who knew that she had one were Pete, who she's closely allied with, and RC, who's already on the jury, but she essentially thought she was joining in on a fun trend. This, of course, leads to like the very next vote where they get her to flush the idol and vote out Artis instead. But Grace, between the truth bomb and Abby's preemptive idol reveal, which one wins out for you?
Yeah, at the time, I actually thought the truth bomb was a little overblown. Like, he does actually, is this where he also reveals that he had found out about, or is this somebody totally different about Xander's something. Anyway, whatever. I thought it was a little overblown, but I think the fact that he gets to the end and is very much, I mean, there was already sort of like the Shan vote on him as well. But he gets to the end and doesn't win. I think this feels to me like a big moment that sort of like in front of the jury sort of does ultimately affect his game, how his game is perceived in a way, the fact that it gets such big blowback. And then the Abby it's so funny. It's just like, yeah, me too. I also have one. And so it's so much harder because I feel like I give Deshaun much more agency in his mistake. And so perhaps that's where I lean. But I don't know if it's as bad as Abby showing her idol.
I don't know. I kind of lean similarly. It's tough to know if like, because part of my logic is like, well, I felt like Abby didn't really have a shot anyway. So then it's like, oh, you pull out this idol. So, and like physically show the idol like, to everybody. Uh-huh. Whereas maybe did I feel like Deshaun actually still had a chance in that moment? Or maybe like, honestly, maybe based on his behavior previously, it was already like, well, he's not going to win anyway, which is why mm-hmm. Erica was willing to go to the end with him. So this really didn't do anything except just further solidify that he wasn't going to win. So that's like the debate that I'm sort of trying to figure out is whether or not I felt like Deshaun still had a chance before that moment.
It's really tough, right? Because he does end up getting nearly shut out. And it's from what I'm recalling with a lot of talk in my exit interviews, like it does seem like the truth bomb really didn't help things. You know, Deshaun survives that final five vote because Ricard is such a big threat. Right. He technically didn't get picked to go to the final three. He had to win the fire making challenge. There is a world in which Heather wins there at that last mm-hmm. second and Deshaun ends up finishing in fourth place. So I would say maybe it wasn't a game sinker and that he was like already pretty far underwater, but it didn't exactly make him rise in that regard.
No. It didn't make Abby rise either. Yeah. So I don't know. This is tough. I think I would put my vote on Deshaun's truth bomb here. But the Abby moment is so entertaining. Even Penner at that tribal council, he's like, this is awesome. He's just enjoying the show. Jeff is in complete shock. Like, so like that almost was maybe more entertaining. But in terms of what was a bad tribal council move, I think I have to go to Deshaun.
Yeah, I think so too. I just think it's kind of unfortunate. Like, you know, I don't think Abby Maria is like a bad player by any means. But I do think if I take those two players and then who made a choice that then made their game worse, I do think that Deshaun, I have more like faith that Deshaun would not do that. And so the fact that he did do it, I think is why I think Deshaun's move is worse. His tribal council performance is worse.
Also with the Deshaun tribal, it was funny to see how some of the players responded to Deshaun's like, I'm going to drop a truth bomb moment, because Xander is like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, I don't care. And then Erica's, I'll deal with whatever he says. Like a very like, I just have to wait and see. And then Heather says nothing and just goes.
I'm surprised she didn't get up and start whispering. I will say honorable mention for the bracket was when Heather pulls a JT and starts whispering to try to, I think if I recall correctly, like wasn't she was trying to get the votes onto Nasir instead of Tiffany. Yes. But Tiffany says that Heather actually ruined it.
Yes. And that move ends up being the reason why they don't split the vote on Xander and vote Xander out with an idol because Heather goes off. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Deshaun is going to be the truth bomb moment that perseveres here for Survivor 41 and moves on to the next round. Let's move over to the bottom of the bracket. We have from Survivor Blood versus Water. I call this Jervis Counts to Four. This is at the infamous. And they did draw rocks in Survivor Blood versus Water, unlike 42, where essentially it's Hayden with maybe some Katie on the side, a Katie Collins side dish, trying to convince Sierra to flip over and force a tie. And in a particularly facepalmy move, Jervis is sitting on the end, gloating about how Hayden, you're Hayden Dunn, this ain't Big Brother. We've got our alliance right here. 1, 2, 3, 4. And he makes sure that Sierra is number four. That should be pointed out earlier on this tribal council. They basically say like, you know, I think Monica says, oh, well, you know, Sierra knows that four is better than six. And so while the whole majority alliance was kind of putting off warning signs in Sierra's head that she was at the bottom of the majority, Jervis counting off, I think, really was the nail in that coffin. That is up against another moment from Survivor Philippines. This is less strategic and more of like a big kooky character moment. Probably what Miss Angie Layton is most well known for in her three episodes of Survivor Philippines. Jeff asks the tribal council, what's the one thing that they could change about their experience? And Angie famously replies that we could have cookies. And Jeff is apoplectic. He is besides himself. I'll go first here. As fun as the cookies moment is, and that further cements her legacy forevermore. She is the cookie girl on Survivor. I got to go with Jervis here, just because it's, while it is a smaller moment and a much larger moment of warning flags being sent off to Sierra, I'm sort of using this as a catch-all for all of the foot and mouth moments that happen, particularly with Jervis and Monica. And I just think him doing it and then just flippantly saying, "That's the way I count," is just really showing the fact that Jervis is going to get shut out in the final vote. And I think you need no further microcosm, just like the way maybe his personal tact could have used a bit more work than in this tribal council. I can imagine there's a world where this is where why Sierra flips and causes the first rock draw in 23 seasons to happen. So I personally think that Jervis counting to four is the bigger, badder TC moment. Liana, what say you?
Yeah, this isn't even close for me at all, this matchup. Like, it actually even starts before that, when, because they go on the reward and Jeff asks a question about it. And Sierra's like, "Oh, no. I know why he didn't pick me. You know, Jervis didn't pick me because I've gotten to eat." And then Jervis comes in and corrects and says, "Yeah, and I've been with Monica and Tyson the whole time, and I'm super loyal with them." So it's like she just gave you an out of a reason why you didn't take her. And you went and essentially said, "No, it's not because of that. It's because I trust them more." And then you have the 4 out of 6, and then you have the counting. So it's just like thing after thing after thing, where going in, Sierra clearly is on their side. So it was just like totally screwed the whole thing. They get so lucky with the rock in that moment. And it just, oh my God, it's so bad. And this is also the Russell Ruffle Feathers Tribal Council as well, which I forgot that that was the same one. And I was just like, oh, the cutting the tension with the knife with Tyson, it's just beautiful. If anything sums up that season of Survivor, it's that Tribal Council. It's so good.
I totally agree. The cookie thing, I think what's hilarious is Jeff does not even really, he's certainly like surprised that that's Angie's answer. But then he asks like a follow up question to Malcolm, and he's like, "Malcolm, like, what do you think?" He's like, "Yeah, I would love cookies." He's like, "You have to be kidding me, Malcolm!" Like, it's such a specific time of Jeff, I think, when he's so like, you know, people who are not here to play. Like, I think it feels very like almost the way he would like react to somebody who was going to quit. I think it's like this, like, very like disdain for the cookie.
Well, his question is like, "Malcolm, can you believe this ish?
Yeah.
Can you believe what do you think? Clearly you have to take my side." And Malcolm's like, "No, dude, I'm hungry." He's like, "What the hell?" I mean, remember,
like, it's not the answer I would have given, but like,
but remember, this is the season after he claims afterwards that Colton quote unquote quit. Right. Mm-hmm. With the whole like appendicitis thing. It's going to be 2 seasons from now when Colton does outright quit in the aforementioned Blood versus Water. So, yeah, Jeff is sort of like, has a certain mentality, I think, when it comes to the instability of players. Like, he's having none of it. And it's nice that he has opened up about it more so as of late, that if someone says, "I wish we could have cookies now," he'll just say sorry for you and not, you know, be completely rageful about it.
Yeah.
I think if this is a bracket of like Jeff being incredulous moments, this would obviously move on because it is an iconic moment. But I think for the criteria we're using for the bracket, like, unfortunately, it doesn't move on here. Although this was when Roxy says booby trap, which is hilarious because they talk a lot about boobies in that episode. So,
but also Angie doesn't go home here. Roxy gets voted out. Angie goes home next. So it's not even, you know, detrimental specifically at this tribal council. So.
Yeah, to her game.
Yeah,
they're not more. Immediately like out.
You're going to go. So, want cookies?
Four.
We'll have cookies.
It's not four, but with three, Jervis and his foot and mouth advances to the next round. Last matchup of round one. We're going back to another Jeff Probst reaction, if you will. The first one is from Survivor Cook Islands. Billy Garcia declares that he did find love on that island, much like Marianne and Zach back in the day. Her name is Candace from Railroad Tribe. That infamous moment from, again, remember when Cook Islands was good for like the first couple of episodes? And then it is up against not a moment that's talked about a bunch, but one that was mentioned I thought would be interesting to include from Survivor Fiji, the first correct idol play in Survivor history, where all the votes are going to be piled onto Yao Man. At Tribal Council, Stacey Kimball hints, "Oh, I think a line's going to be drawn in the sand. I think this alliance is going to be split." From what the edit tells us, that essentially rings a bell in Yao Man and Earl's heads to be like, "Okay, something is up. You're in trouble, Yao Man. Let me play my idol." As a result, Yao Man plays the idol. Stacey herself is booted. Grace, which of these two are we putting through?
Yeah, so I think to the earlier point of like, does it hurt your game? Like, where is your stock sort of before? Billy, I think, is going home anyway. So it's like, it's such an iconic moment. It's such a, you know, a wonderful thing that we have in the history of this TV. It's hilarious. But I do think like Stacey ends up going home here because she makes a bad decision at Tribal Council. So for me, it has to be Stacey's move is the worst Tribal Council performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely agree here. The Jeff incredulousness, of course, is very iconic. Like, I'm sorry, you mean Candace?
I believe he actually does like a gift thing, and he's like,
yeah,
he does like a weird sideways head movement.
And just the way that Billy talks about it too is so funny. Like, my prize is that I fell in love in this game. My prize is her, blah blah blah. Everybody else is eye rolling on the tribe. Ozzy's like, this is news to me. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, Ozzy's like, wait, you can find love on Survivor?
Sign me up.
So yeah, and then I mean, obviously, then there's that moment, but everything before is just them throwing Billy under the bus, and then the implication that it was thrown, the challenge was thrown to get rid of Billy. So it's like, yeah, Billy was dead in the water anyway. So, like, you're going home. So I'm going to give this to Fiji here. And I think one of my favorite moments of that tribal was Earl's reaction to everything, because there's a lot of focus on his reaction to what Stacey's saying. And that was very iconic.
Yeah, I'll be the lone dissenting vote here for Billy, just because I do feel like if we're going with like bad in terms of criteria being embarrassing, this might be one of the most embarrassing moments just in general at any tribal council where someone is like, I'm in love with this person. It's just, oh, it's so woof worthy. It's so bad.
See, when you put it like that, when you say it, it's so bad. It's bad tribal council moments. Maybe this was.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're fine leaving it here, much like Billy's love of Candace is left behind here. So Stacey moves on. Let's jump back up to the top here as we begin round two, and in come the quote unquote top seeders, again, randomly generated. So we did have JT beginning the advent of whispering at tribal council. That is going up against a tribal council where they barely sat down. This is from the infamous Pilots versus Passengers Julia Boot episode from Survivor Edge of Extinction. I picked out one particular moment. It's when Julie has just had enough and she says, literally, I've had enough. I'm jumping ship. And she runs over and sits in David Wright's lap like he's some sort of emaciated Santa Claus. And she essentially, like, officially says she and Ron are, I think, flipping over with the lessees to vote out Julia in that tribal council. So Liana, between that and the JT whispering, which to you is the bad tribal council moment that prevails?
Yeah, obviously the Edge of Extinction moment is very wild, a bad moment. But I think ultimately I go back to like Julie didn't get voted out though, right? And ends up, you know, making it to what? She was final six, final five. When did Julie go?
Final
out?
Three.
Final
three.
Oh, yeah, duh. She was zero, vote, final finalist. Zero yeah. vote finalist, obviously. So I just think like that moment obviously doesn't hurt her really, unless it's like, oh, well, she would have gotten votes but didn't. But I feel like with the Edge of Extinction, everything is just kind of thrown into a loop because you have Chris Underwood who comes back and ends up winning. And like Gavin is able to get like four votes or something like that, whereas Julie is like completely out of it. But the arguments that y'all made about the JT Tribal Council, that was really bad now that I'm thinking it through. Yeah. So I think I have to go with JT here.
What do you think, Grace?
I agree. I think from the standpoint that, JT doesn't get voted out, but JT gets an ally to be voted out and then goes home next, right? So I think it sets him up on a trajectory because of the decision he makes to be out of the game. Whereas Julie does not, I don't think. I feel like this is in here more as a, this feels perhaps when I was starting to feel the rumblings on Twitter of like, yeah, okay, the thing that JT started. Like, yeah, okay, do we need to like do this? Is this fun? I feel like it gets especially brought up in like Winners at War. There's a lot of like the whispering tribal council stuff, and this is still pre it being subtitled as well. So I feel like it's like a bit of an annoying moment more than it is like a bad moment. And I think JT certainly has the worst the worst travel counselor. It's unfortunate that we don't get much from Julia in this season, so then it results in Julia's boot, but there's not much there.
I mean, yeah, when you talk about resulting in Julia's boot, I believe if I recall Edge of Extinction correctly, which I honestly don't have that much of a great memory of, I think it was that they were initially going to vote for Aurora, I think, but Julie pretty much was the one to be like, let's vote out Julia. So, like, the blood is on her hands, Julie and Julia. Great movie, by the way. Very different scenario here at Tribal Council. Yeah, to your point, this is a little bit of like a parent and child situation, is it not? Like, JT whispered so that these people could speak full-throated at each other at Tribal Council. So I do find it an interesting pairing. I think I would go with JT here as well. Again, I think it just really edges out by Edge of Extinction's out by the fact that this has immediate ramifications for JT and arguably his entire tribe, as opposed to, it's a little different in the post-merge, right? Where like, yes, Julie definitely makes a move here by getting rid of Julia, but then like, Edge of Extinction's gameplay was so fast and loose and all over the place that like she was not in immediate danger. It maybe made her appear, get her angry with people like Julia, but I don't know if this was necessarily a game sinker or floater versus like the game changer, quite literally, that was JT doing the whispering. So I'm in agreement here. I think JT is going to win out here and move on to the final four.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on here. Our truth bomb is facing off in a modern Survivor showdown with the reason for the season, the entire onus of this bracket. It is, of course, Daniel's entire performance, I should say, once the votes are tied. Whether you want to talk about him revoting for Jenny, whether you have his declaration of, okay, let me, my opening statement is I refuse to go to Rocks, whether it's him throwing Chanel under the bus, saying that she's the one that whispered it to him before him finally like abdicating and being like, Lydia, will you forgive me for this? Okay, I'm going to vote out Jenny. It was just an overall set of dominoes that are covered in poop, but I loved every second of it. Grace, between 41 and 42, who's getting the advance here?
Yeah, so I actually think that Daniel's, the ideas behind what Daniel is trying to do are not that bad. I think that it is executed very, very poorly. So I think the first thing of saying, I'm not going to Rocks, I'm not going to do it, I think actually ultimately is probably better than really trying to like defend Jenny and keep Jenny around only to then ultimately swap and say, because I think as soon as, if he has that mentality that he's not going to Rocks, he's never going to Rocks. So him saying it, I actually think does him a little bit of like, gives him a buffer to basically, once he's going to actually say, yes, I'm voting out Jenny, he doesn't have to be defending Jenny and off-putting Lydia, who he potentially needs moving forward. And I also think that like his idea to say, it's not really me who pushed this vote is good. Maybe you don't do that at Tribal Council and throw Chanel under the bus. I think ultimately like everything he's doing isn't that bad. It's whether his execution of it is worse than Deshaun's truth bomb. And I kind of think it is, because I think heading into Tribal, he's in a much better spot than he is walking out of Tribal. I don't know if it's as bad as people think it is. I think there's a good chance that he's still actually in the majority next episode. Whereas again, to Deshaun's, the argument about Deshaun earlier is that he kind of seemed like he just dug himself deeper, but he was already in the hole.
Daniel did a terrible job, and the ideas behind it were also terrible. This is my feeling. This is my opinion.
All right. Okay.
So first of all, we start with Daniel's. This is before we even get to the votes. The first thing Daniel says is, let me tell you the reason I'm going to lose season 42, which is the same thing he did during his casting stuff, which is like, good for casting, bad for the show. You're telling everyone that you're a paranoid player, which if you are working with someone, I don't want to work with someone who's paranoid, right? So you're like, yeah, I'm a paranoid player. Let me list the people who calm me down. The two people who are Mike and Chanel.
Yeah, he pulls a Jervis Chanel here.
Yeah, this was okay. That was a mistake. Second,
and you
mistake,
can realize he does it because he's gonna be like, also my mom, I guess.
Yeah, maybe my girlfriend.
Next choice your mom. Like, no, you do everyone.
Because he realized that he can't say everybody, but also he now needs to pivot. It's really bad.
Oh my God. Horrible. Okay. Don't know what that decision was about. And this being said, this is all fabulous TV. Again, I will say no one learned from this. Please make these exact same mistakes. Okay. Please, please, please. Second mistake. This is actually Chanel, not Daniel. Chanel leans over and whispers to Daniel, Lydia. Now, this is could be just based on the edit, but we see Hai, who is in the line of sight with Chanel, see that moment, again, edited, so he may have actually missed it in the reality of it all. But, like, what? Why would you whisper that at all in the first place? And Daniel's like, yeah, yeah, Lydia. Okay, so then what else do I have on my, like, long list of things that I thought were, like, just a complete mess? Okay, so then you get to the actual, like, conversation of it all. I think the opening with I'm never going to rocks, why would you ever say that? Okay, why would you ever say that? Also, here's the thing, Daniel. Guess what? You're still in the majority, even if you vote Jenny out. Why would you not be the martyr of saying, Mike, do you want to go to rocks? Chanel, do you want to go to rocks? I will switch the vote to protect the two of you from going to rocks. Let me do the math. The three of us are in danger. We can still be in the majority. Jenny, I'm so sorry. But Chanel, Mike, do you really want to go to rocks right now? Like, no offense, Jenny. Or like, right? Like, that's the move, because you're still in the majority. Two, why would you throw your closest ally under the bus at all? Because now, no longer you're in the majority. You don't even have your closest ally. Mike clearly doesn't want to work with shifty people. He says that at the beginning of Tribal Council. Mike goes, Chanel would not lie to me because, like, I don't work with people like that. We have he clearly has demonstrated to you that he is a player who values loyalty. So, like, throwing a person under the bus makes no sense. You put Hai and Lydia absolutely in the power position here. Daniel is gone next from that tribal. Like, mark my words, the next time they go, he's out of there, because Chanel is able to go. Mike is burned by him because he's upset at him. Chanel is burned at him, upset with him. Hai and Lydia are like, you just betrayed us. They're all upset with him. So in what universe is Daniel going to be in the majority? Like, I just don't understand it. He went from being in an absolutely fabulous position to an absolutely horrible position. Like, this could be...
The other really bad one is, are you going to hold this against me?
It's like, yeah.
Of course they're going to say yes.
Lydia. Don't be mad at me.
And like, maybe it was in comparison to Hai, who I think just handled himself so fabulously. Like, Grayson, you're like, yeah, Hai's my wearing pack. I was like, yes, I was obsessed with Hai. I think that Hai was just like, so when did I lose your trust? So calm, you know,
And I was worried, because you look at his face in that tropic, he looks so like so worried, obviously worried. And he is. He should be.
Look at these random things. It's they sound tribal counselor like, oh, and unicorns exist. And you're like, you're dealing with factors that he had no idea about, Mike being able and unable to lose a vote, nor Chanel losing her vote. So now he was very understandably like, wait, why are there two votes? What the hell is going on here?
But even pre-vote, he looks so paranoid, which he is right to be paranoid. But I was worried that he was not, like, because he was so nervous, he was not going to be able to pull it together. And he totally does.
You know what it is? It's like if we sent a caveman to modern times and he's like, what is this thing in your pocket that can send messages? What? Mm-hmm. How is this happening?
The fact that he was able to stay calm, so impressive, because I also think Chanel played this poorly, because the whole, like, when you're fighting, you just let Daniel burn himself.
Yes.
Like, you just be like, especially again, because you have the majority, like, it just, oh my gosh, this whole tribal council was just so fun. It was such a mess. It was so bad.
I hated Chanel's non-answer, where, like, Daniel says, like, okay, Chanel, who did you want me to vote for? And she just says, I don't have a vote. That is the worst response you could have given. I'm like, no, you wanted something. It's not like you were a decisionless robot when you remove the right to vote. So it was just such an easy cop out. And everyone could tell, I would imagine, that it was an easy cop out to be like, why? I didn't want anybody because I wasn't able to vote.
I love this because there's so much happening. There's so many of these, you know, the votes and everything that's happening. They all get asked these like very like simple questions. Like, you know, it's like, who calms you down? And it's like, how do I answer this in a way that doesn't make anybody, if I don't say anybody, then everyone's going to think I don't trust them. If I say some of them, if I say everybody, that also looks bad. And then also like, who did you want to vote for? It's like, well, I'm not going to say that now. So what do I say? I don't know.
Okay. What was Daniel trying to accomplish by being like, I'm freaking paranoid? Is that like to play off the, I'm not a threat kind of thing, but it's like way too early to be doing that. Like, dude, chill out.
This is the time to be like, this is my family. These are my people. You know?
Yeah. But I would imagine to a certain extent, and who knows when we'll get to talk with Daniel again, to Liana's point, it might be next week, but I could imagine it's very much, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if this is in the episode or in a secret scene, but I remember there was like a scene at Vati where Daniel was like, I totally thought that I think it was in the first episode where he's like, I didn't think that I'd make allies. Yeah, like I totally thought I'd be ostracized. So I think honestly, it might be a bit of imposter syndrome. Like, I don't want to psychologically project here, but like, I can imagine this thing where he says, I did not realize that I would have so many punches on my dance card here. And so it just allows him to like keep having diarrhea of the mouth at this point where it all just completely comes out at Tribal Council.
Oh my God. Yeah. The one moment that I liked from Chanel was the, you're a super fan and you're telling me you had like no agency. That was obviously good to like push it back onto him. And then, yeah, this is such a mess, Tribe. Honestly, like Lydia didn't really get to say much. So I guess in my power rankings of who came out of the Tribe looking good, it's like high number one, then Lydia, then like big gap, Mike, big gap, Chanel, big gap, Daniel. Like, yeah. That's what the ranking I'm putting. Anyway, so if it was not obvious, this is a very clear Daniel season 42 win over 41.
Yeah, yes. Agreed. Open and shut case, to quote a piece of lawyer parlance.
He ends up not being voted out immediately, which I actually think there is a world in which Hai and Lydia actually do bring him along instead of the other two, but we'll see. I think more likely probably Chanel gets looped in as their third. But even if he manages to save himself, it will have to be because he does something totally different than the approach he took here. He'll have to do something miraculous.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Look, Mike could get his idol back. I just feel like Mike was already so dismissive of Daniel even before the Tribal Council, like with the whole, like he wanted to read the idol again.
He's so squirrely. He's really squirrely.
Yeah, exactly. He's very flighty. And then Mike is like shaking his head to things that Daniel's saying before they even vote. I'm like, I don't think Mike wanted to really work with him anyway. So now that Jenny is gone, if Jenny was sort of like the tie there, maybe Mike felt really good about him in the first couple days and then he like got to know him a little bit more. He's like, not this guy. I don't know.
What a beautifully edited episode that at the beginning he loses the idol and then Hai's making the joke about how he loses all of his stuff and his shoulder. Now Tribal Council, he loses his total stance in the game. He's lost everything.
Lose your idol, lose your allies, lose yourself, to quote Eric Matthews as plays with squirrels. All right, let's move on here to the bottom of the bracket. Now we have Jervis counting to four, winner of the last round, facing off against another Jenny boot. This is from Survivor Co. Wrong, where Jennifer Lanzetti, she of the bug in her ear, at Tribal Council, essentially, like, from what it has been edited, there is a plan for to either boot Alicia or for the girls to possibly come together and boot Kyle Jason. And Jennifer at Tribal Council speaks up saying, quote, a lot of plans were being thrown out there, which essentially perks everyone ears out. Scott and Kyle question what Jennifer means by that. She then proceeds to throw Alicia under the bus, saying that there was a women's alliance and now all eyes are on her. And in the very last second, again, from what we're perceiving, she then stands up on her seat and says, I would like to make an announcement, like she's a child at a party. Everyone, please stick to your plan. We have a strong alliance here. And Jennifer is voted out. So, Grace, between Jenny's last stand and Jervis exposing the majority, who wins out here?
I was so excited for Jennifer Lanzetti before heading into Co Wrong, and I was so sad to see this happen. She does get voted out here, but again, I don't know how much this feels like it all switched at Tribal Council. I do think it's interesting. This is a really interesting one because I think Jennifer goes home here, but in the Jervis situation, it's really bad, but because the rocks go their way, like Jervis ends up being totally fine. And so do you weigh the idea that like he basically caused him to go to rocks, which could have caused one of his own alliance or someone in his own alliance to go home, to be so much worse than Jennifer being voted out? I really don't know how I'm going to vote here.
This one's tough because one interpretation of the edit is that Jason and Sydney switch their votes, right? They flop their votes all over the place because they kind of make eye contact after Jenny like does her whole spiel and they're like, okay, yeah, we're like getting rid of her, right? And so it's the three of them. It's Alicia, Jason, and Sydney that all vote together, right? If I remember correctly. So it really does kind of feel like the votes could have swapped. Now, that being said, Alicia just gets voted out next, so it's like, well, maybe we just flipped the order of the two of them, because it did feel like Sydney was the closest with Jason and Scott in that tribe anyway, which, by the way, Sydney did not deserve all those wackos. Like, she deserves so much more, but
yeah,
So, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of feels like, also maybe because it was at the early part of the game versus like a critical mistake later on. But then to be results oriented, both of them kind of worked out, at least in favor of, you know, sort of the majority there. So this is, I think, kind of tough.
Yeah, this is a real flop up, if you will.
A real flopper. Yeah.
I will say it's tough. I think from a game perspective, like this is the head versus heart. From a game perspective, mm-hmm. I would say the Jervis one, because again, it had such ramifications and was so blatant. But the Jenny one is more cringy. Like, I think whenever someone stands up on a chair in real life, it gives me hives. It's just this idea of like nothing that has ever been said while standing up on a chair has been taken well, in my opinion, whether it's someone like making a speech in class or an office or something like that. Whenever you get up on that chair, you are just opening yourself up for embarrassment. No matter
what. You have to get on the desk like in Dead Poets Society. If you're on the chair, exactly. It's not powerful. If you're on the desk.
And even then, mm-hmm. That was embarrassing for a split second before the second person did it. You know, then it was diminishing returns of like, oh my God, I'm up here on my own.
If Jenner had been like, everybody, let's get up on our stools.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if everyone, Jenny said, oh, let's all stand up. I think that would have helped a smidge. So I don't know. Yeah, this is definitely the toughest one so far.
I think Eileen. My vote is that Jervis's is worse, because even though it ends up working out, he has a better position that then he was. And I think, you know, there's so much other stuff that I think would lead him to being a losing finalist. Whereas Jennifer, this is so early in the game that like Jennifer, I don't know, I don't think goes from like being that high up to being like the next vote. Those other three just end up voting out Alicia anyway. I think they just end up voting Jennifer out the next time, mm-hmm. potentially. So I feel like Jervis is, you know, he impacts his own game worse than Jennifer does, even though Jervis doesn't get voted out and his tribe actually comes out of that tribal with the majority.
Yeah, this is tough. They both make multiple mistakes as well, right? So it's not just like, oh, I said one thing that kind of screwed it up. I like made several mistakes along the way. But I think for me, the tiebreaker is going to be the Russell Ruffle Feathers moment, because I want to take the whole tribal council into effect. So I think I'm also going to go with Blood Water.
All right. I will throw an honorable mention to Jennifer, because again, I know that I think Jennifer has also said in the exit interview that like she knew she was going anyway, which was why she stood up. And like the edit, I think, obscured a lot of the targeting against her to make it seem like a blindside. But at the same time, man, that was just cringy to watch. And, you know, I didn't include this because, again, final tribal council moments. But if we did, I definitely would have included Chelsea from One World being like, I'm going to stand and deliver this to the jury as if I'm in the business like Brad Culpepper.
Yeah.
Again, don't stand, people. Standing's not good. All right. Final matchup of the Elite Eight here. And it's a doozy. So we have Stacey hinting at a split in Fiji up against, if we did do seed, this might be the number one seed, baby, because it was by far the most mentioned, the infamous stick to the plan in Survivor San Juan del Sur. It is a plan to essentially have, you know, all the votes, I think, piled onto Keith. To have Keith then play the idol and then idol out, you know, one of the majority alliance members. Keith then hints at tribal council, not even hints, just very blatantly says, I say stick to the plan. Hey, 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 hey. George Bush laugh. And essentially that really clues in a lot of the majority alliance where they decide to split their votes now between Keith and Wes. On top of that, Natalie now knows that Mish might be in trouble, pressures him to play his idol. Essentially, we get two idols played at the tribal council, and Wes is booted here by his father's idol play and actions. This is an easy vote for me for stick to the plan. But Grace, what do you think?
It's so much worse. I mean, we talked about like who ends up going home. Like, it's not you. This is his son. And so I feel like, yeah, not great from Keith. They would have had the numbers to be able to like, yeah, foil the split vote plan. And because of Keith's blunder, his son goes home instead. So I think very clearly, I mean, there's an argument, I think, that like Stacey does go home. And so you cause someone to play their idol and you go home. I mean, Keith causes people to play his idol. John play his idol. Did John play his idol? Natalie plays.
Natalie convinces John to play his idol.
Right. And so, yeah, Keith doesn't go home. Keith he, you know, there's a kind of a, all the people who are with are going to vote with Keith and Wes in this vote end up going like out, but not Keith. Keith ends up like going much further in this game. Yeah, I think it's Keith, but I actually don't think it's that much of a difference there.
Mm-hmm. I think they're sort of similar, right? Yeah. Which is like all of a sudden this plan gets outed, which then idols get played, blah, 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 blah. I do think I'm also going to pick San Juan del Sur here, if only for the vote that says Wes with W-E-S-S. Like that just really makes me laugh. I don't know why Wes sticking his tongue out. But no, I mean, like that tribal council was like so epically confusing, but also the way that the majority alliance was able to sort of recalibrate and like figure out their game plan, I think is also very impressive. So there's kind of like both that it's like Keith obviously screwed up and then the majority was able to like completely combat it and shut it down. So, I'm going with San Juan del Sur here.
All right. So San Juan del Sur wins out and advances to, would you look at this, a Final Four, like back in the day of when their Grace was eating Sundays on Sunday, watching a Survivor finale with the Final Four.
That's right.
So here we go.
Oh, no.
JT whispering at Tribal Council versus the entire Daniel diatribe that Liana went on. All right, Liana, I'll throw it to you here. Which one are you picking?
So tough, but Daniel's is so bad. And I know it's recency bias. And the problem is that we also haven't seen like the next episode, right? So, cause you could say like, well, JT is like, it's like kind of like the nail in his coffin for that moment as well, right? So, okay. So he ends up having that issue. I feel like this is exact same situation for Daniel, but I also don't know that that's necessarily the case. So I'm trying to figure out like how I weigh these things with like one thing I absolutely know the outcome, the other, the outcome is yet to be determined, but I have a very strong feeling on that outcome, but I could be wrong. I don't know. This is so hard.
Yeah. Oh God. I don't know because I do feel like the JT stuff is smaller in scope because like you said, like we went through an entire list of all the things that Daniel and Chanel did at this tribal council that just seemed so bad. But at the same time, like JT's was more concentrated, right? Mm-hmm. Like he had this plan to approach Brad and be like, hey, play. Essentially, he wanted Ty to play the idol so that the votes would bounce back on Sandra and Sandra goes. That was his plan. Mm-hmm. And he, much like Omer and Chanel, like didn't realize that the other party was smart enough to be like, okay, he wants Sandra. We'll just vote out like Malcolm or someone who's really threatening to the other side. And so like, is that worse or is that better? I really can't tell.
It's so funny because I was thinking like, well, at least, you know, maybe I'll chuck JT a bone and be like, it was a merged tribal council. There's a weird thing. Like, oh yeah, Daniel had like, there's two no votes. So I don't know. I like thought I had a tiebreaker and then I don't.
A high breaker.
I think it's the number. That's the thing is like JT made one mistake that sort of set off a chain of events, right? It's the fact that he went over and whispered to Brad, they're voting out Sierra, right? That was like the whole moment, whereas Daniel made several blunders. I think I'm going to go Daniel here.
I think he would agree with you. I actually, you know, JT's, it is bad, but I can kind of see where he's come, you know, he's a little bit too cute and he tries this thing and it kind of just ends up blowing up in his face where I think that everything else he's doing is a little bit better than what Daniel ends up doing here. So I think Daniel's is worse, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm outvoted here. I think I might go with JT. Maybe it's because again, we haven't seen the next episode to see if Daniel like ends up getting voted out next episode, then yes. But I do think to that point, Grace, like, I almost find it worse on JT because what he tried was cute as opposed to like Daniel's, which was more so survival mode. And like, I don't want to draw a rock out of a bag on day seven. Let me just like do whatever I need to do. JT's like, ooh, I got a little trick I want to try. The season after he tries another trick and ends up failing. Like he just keeps going, keeps Sisyphean almost. He keeps going back to the table, trying the same thing. But I'm fine to be outvoted in this case.
Actually, that's kind of a good point. I kind of want to change my vote.
But Daniel was never going to be voted out. It was like, you're safe. You're deciding other people's fate, essentially. And you are so concerned with repairing your relationship with Lydia and High that you are willing to trash your other relationships for people that you just betrayed and betrayed twice because you voted twice to vote Lydia out. It's not like you were like, oh, crap, maybe I should change before that. It was like, no, you decided to betray them twice and then decided that those two relationships were more valuable than the relationships you had built previously.
Well, JT kind of decided that people who are not on his tribes, that those relationships were more valuable than the ones where he's on the tribe.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think I vote JT, actually.
I think I'm going to go with JT as well, because I totally agree that, like, Daniels was a mess. Though I will give him, like, a short amount of credit that he was dealing with, again, this unprecedented circumstance of having two of his allies not have votes as well and, like, trying to do the math on the fly or the high. As opposed to, again, like, it was a little bit of an unprecedented situation with all the tribes of tribal council, but JT made, like, a very conscious maneuver to essentially serve up, much like I did with the idols and heroes versus villains, right? He served an opportunity up to his enemies, being like, here, please take this offer I present to you and, like, turn it around, which to me is a bit more, like, I think the Daniel one is more cringy, but I think the JT one is more game-related, and once again, I guess in this case, game-related beats out cringy for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So by a very tight margin, JT is going to move on to the finals here. But who will he face off against? It is Jervis counting to four and rustling some feathers versus stick to the plan. Liana, who do you got?
God, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. A part of me is like results oriented and says, well, Keith Nails is worse because Wes ends up going home. But to me, the Jervis mistake gives me shades of 42 with Daniel's mistake of like, you said this wrong, you said this wrong, you said this wrong, you said this wrong. And then it ends up culminating in something that's like so bad for you and your alliance that it's like the repeated mistakes versus the kind of one mistake that then sets off this chain reaction of error. I think I'm going to give my vote to blood versus water, sticking with my sort of like that's the criteria I'm going with. But this is such a toss up.
I was going to say, which one? We have a blood versus water showdown here.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. No, blood water.
I think it's such an interesting point about because I think, again, real results oriented. He comes out of this tribal council totally fine because they win the rock draw. Mm-hmm. But I do think it hurts his game like long term, kind of like in the way we're talking about with Deshaun a little bit that like, I don't think he's like totally like he can make to the end and then just like win. I certainly think this like hurts his chances to be able to win, a lot to be so friends. I really don't know. Yeah, the stick to the plan is Sun gets voted out. They would have had the votes there, whereas at least the other one is only resulting in a tie. So I think I also vote stick to the plan.
Yeah, I'm going to go stick to the plan as well, just because I think that Jervis, while it was a bad thing, I think was one moment of many, right? We spoke before about the Monica six is four is better than six comment, where like this was maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, but also was a big thing. There were several contributors to that as well, as opposed to like stick to the plan was a big swerve of the majority alliance to crook their heads and be like, wait, what? Whereas maybe they could have been completely blindsided. And like this entire alliance that essentially has been on the back foot since Josh got booted might have actually finally taken the numbers. And while Keith does go very far, we should note that like the next two votes are essentially the cleaning out of his alliance, which could have taken power had, you know, they've been able to pull off this maneuver. So I think stick to the plan's gotta win out here, and Jervis counting to four will be left at the final four. Now, just for the finale, I think it's super easy. I think I say 3-2-1, and then we say either JT or Keith. And I think that's just like gut kneecap reaction. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So it's JT or Keith, 3-2-1, and then say the name. 3-2-1, Keith.
Okay. I love that I've been consistently outvoted the last like three. That's fine though. That's
I almost had me once, and then Mike came at the last minute with an argument. I think I'm gonna vote.
All right.
I think the thing with the stick to the plan also is that, as you mentioned, Mike, it was the one that's listed the most frequently. Like it is that iconic in sort of the history of Survivor. I think it's only fitting that it ends up taking the win here.
Yeah, we're going to go nice and no big upsets going on here, though I'm sure there will still be some complaining going on from the audience out there. But yes, congratulations to Stick to the Plan from our consensus being the worst tribal council moment in Survivor's season 42 run so far, though. Who knows? Maybe 43 will give us a reason to do this bracket once more. All right. So to finish things off, as we do every week here on the BNB, we give an opportunity for our guests to shine a light on a charity or cause outside of this kooky world of Survivor. That is something that they very much want to draw support and attention to. So Grace, it is all on you. What would you like to highlight this week?
Yeah, so I wanted to chat about, I feel like this is a little bit fitting, Survivor out in the wilderness. And there's been a lot of anti-LGBTQ legislation happening in the States. And one of the things that I think is an incredible way for kids to feel valued and to be respected is there are lots of really great summer camps for children and family camps and other programming that a lot of places do all over North America. So these camps are for LGBTQ children or children of LGBTQ people. And so specifically, there's one in Ontario. It's called Camp Ten Oaks, a place that I donate to every month. And so that's a great camp. But if there's some other ones, Camp Brave Trails runs out of California and Maryland. If you search sort of, LGBTQ camps near you, I would just sort of encourage you to donate to them. Camps are not a business that make a ton of money, so they can always use your support. A good way to just make sure that, the camp is on the up and up, just make, they should be the American Camping Association accredited or the Canadian Camping Association accredited. Just check for that little indicator would be good. But just search for an LGBTQ camp near you. Suppose a Camp Ten Oaks is the one near me that I would like to shout out. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Grace, thank you so much for coming on and bringing your grace, much like the game of soccer, to our games, our segments, our talking through this just bananas episode and so much more. Hey, if people want to check out all the stuff that you are doing, both here and on post show recaps, how can people keep up with that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Hi From Grace, as mentioned, or the Off Speed podcast on the reality TV.
Now, how do you spell Hi From Grace?
Sell High From Grace. And here on, over on post show recaps, Winning Time, the Los Angeles Lakers show, doing that with Jason Reed, weekly movie coverage with Ariel. We finished up our Flag Means Death coverage, Brooklyn Zed and Sarah Carradine. That show ended up being like surprisingly LGBTQ and it was amazing and incredible. So check that out. And lots of other stuff on the way. So I'm on Twitter at High From Grace.
All right, Liana, what do you got going on? I know you mentioned Joe Buck before, and I'm like, Liana has her NFL reference because of the Masked Singer.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Okay, so follow me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. Puya and I are podcasting about the aforementioned Masked Singer, which is really fun. We finished out Group A, I think Group A, whatever. And we're going to be moving on to the next two groups over the next couple weeks. So look out for all new contestants, which is the fun part about the way that they formatted the season, is that three episodes in, or four episodes in, we're getting a whole new group of people to talk about. So looking forward to that. And then Drag Race. Yep, it's going on. We'll talk about that too. Okay, cool.
All right. And those mouth sounds can really show how Liana's feeling about the eliminations or lack thereof in Drag Race so far. You can follow me at @AMikeBloomType. Check out my interview with Jenny. I know there's been a lot of support around her these past couple days. She responds to the support. Well, talks about her side of everything that happened at Tribal Council and her moments on the island. Really enjoyed that opportunity. Really just love talking to this cast in general. Talking Lost as per usual. Made a reference to Boy Meets World earlier. I went on the Shit 90s Shows Taught Me podcast to talk about arguably one of the most famous episodes of Boy Meets World. And then there was Sean, the infamous murder mystery episode, which was just so much fun to re-experience. Jennifer Love, Pfefferman, and the gang. So you can check that out in addition to all the other stuff that's going on out there in the podverse. Next week, we are going to go forth with Mari forth. Mari is going to be making her Survivor BNB debut as we talk about what is surely going to be some interesting fallout from this Tribal Council, as well as a lot more, I'm assuming, from this wackadoo cast. If you have suggestions for games, feel free to write in rhapbnb@gmail.com. You can also tweet us using #RHAPBNB. Thank you to everyone who has sent us game ideas so far. We are looking at them. We are going to use them over the course of the season. It's just when opportunities come, like being able to talk about bad Tribal Council moments, including one from a past episode, like you got to grab that opportunity. You know, it's dangling right in front of you. Eat that carrot and accept the stick later. So that being said, we're going to be back next week, sticks and all, to talk about episode 4 of Survivor 42 with Mari Forth. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes and Wolf from America for his fantastic theme song. Thank you all so much for listening.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. And I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that horse sounds cool. I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.